Yes, Culture and Conversations is back one more time. Let's get to it. I am your host, Jameson Smallwood, and you're listening to Culture and Conversations. Thank you guys for downloading. Thank you guys for subscribing. Thank you guys for sharing these episodes with your friends on social media. And thank you guys for making this a part of your daily listening experience. We have a great show coming up. I have a guest who goes by the name of Shonda Roberts of Pain to Purpose. Pain to Purpose is a nonprofit organization designed to help women overcome domestic violence and to survive it and thrive after those incidents in their lives. And Shonda shares her very real story up next on Culture and Conversations about how she overcame domestic violence in her life and how she goes on to help women overcome it in theirs. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Yes, this is Culture and Conversations. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and we just want to thank you guys for listening and thank you guys for continuing to support. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast if this is your first time listening. Also, follow along on Facebook and Instagram. Culture and Conversations is the handle for both of those sites on social media, so you'll be able to stay in touch with the show and all of the fun things that I have going on as I bring you guys bonus content and just make you aware about what is happening with the show. I had a chance this week to listen to and some of the happenings and watch some of the happenings around the royal wedding. And for those people who were under a rock, one of Princess Diana's sons got married. And you can tell how into it I am, right? I'm not even going to bother looking up the guy's name. And, you know, his wife is named Meghan Markle. You know, that's what her given name was before she got married. And it was interesting because, you know, the world basically stopped what they were doing to escape from their boring reality, I guess, to watch the royal wedding. And I had a chance to see a piece of it sort of after the fact because I was at a cookout and people were watching it and talking about it. But I also had a chance to listen to the sermon that was given. There was like apparently a wedding address given by Reverend Michael Curry. And it was fascinating, so fascinating that, you know, a 14-minute sermon, which if you go to church, you know that you're lucky if you get out of church with a 25-minute sermon, let alone a 14-minute sermon. And that sermon just caught people's ear and captivated people. Really interesting to me how an authentic Bible-based sermon can connect with people still in this day and age, especially when people are growingly secular and also growingly atheistic. So it was interesting. You know, it was a really good, well-delivered sermon. And just one of those moments in time, I think, that shows that the culture, while it is calcifying towards ideas of religion, towards ideas of Christianity, towards ideas of God, it is still supple enough to hear the truth of God for those people who are receptive to it, obviously. And I thought it was good that Reverend Curry talked about love and how love is the thing that makes the human relationships, not only with ourselves, but with God, significant, powerful, dynamic, and able to have the agency to produce change in the world. And, you know, love, obviously, according to the Christian doctrine, is defined by God. It is defined as God and defined by God. And the foundation of love resting in God gives it permanence. It gives it an unconditional nature. It gives it a condition where it doesn't change based on the whims of people and how culture can change and define love and how we will define love in our hearts and our own heads from person to person without, you know, any sense of, you know, permanence. And it really spoke to the curiosity, I think, that people's souls still have for things that are transcendent, supernatural. And I think it was interesting to see how all of that played into that melting pot of attention that was the royal wedding. You know, me as a divorcee, I looked at it and I was like, you know, it's all beautiful today, but you obviously have to go on and be successful in your marriage and do the hard things, to do the things that make the moments like that significant. You know, one of the things I learned through my divorce is that you can have a great wedding. You can have a wonderful celebration in a moment in time, but the wedding isn't significant. The gifts, the ring, the how beautiful your bride was, how handsome you were as the groom, your family and friends being gathered together, none of that's significant unless the two people getting married actually go through the work of making their marriage last and be significant. So it all hinges on that. And I think Reverend Michael Curry's sermon talking about love was a great segue into hopefully giving them the married royal couple, the new Duke and Duchess of whatever province or place there, you know, over there in England. It gives them the foundation, obviously, to hopefully go on to be successful in their marriage as they see love and as they define love for each other and for themselves. But it was a really interesting time because everybody was watching it, so I got sucked in. So I hope I don't lose my man card or my cool points with you guys for talking about the royal wedding. But it was one of those just weird inflection points where you had religion, you had celebrity, you had wealth, you had class, all of those things mingling together to produce a very interesting moment. So, and speaking of successful marriages and relationships and the dynamics between people in those relationships, I had the opportunity to interview and sit down and chat with Shonda Roberts of Pain to Purpose. Shonda is the founder of Pain to Purpose, and she shares her experience surviving domestic violence, overcoming a very abusive relationship, and how it shaped her emphasis in this area of work that she's doing, giving back to her community and helping women to overcome these abusive relationships that they find themselves in. It was a revealing conversation, one where I didn't do much talking. And it also got me to be very candid about, you know, things I've been through in my past relationships and moments where I found myself being abusive and being abused. And I wasn't expecting that, but I was glad that the conversation went that way. So up next on Culture and Conversations, a great conversation with Shonda Roberts of Pain to Purpose. Welcome to Culture and Conversations. I have the privilege of speaking with Shonda Roberts. She is the founder of Pain to Purpose. It is a nonprofit organization designed to help promote the awareness and prevention of domestic violence. Shonda, how are you doing? Welcome to the conversation.
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well now that we've gotten through the intro together. What people will never hear on the Culture and Conversations podcast are all the botched intros that I do. They only hear the clean ones. So,
okay.
To get through those, that's always the best part of the interview, is to get the interview rolling. So, Shonda, tell me a little bit about Pain to Purpose. Why did you found an organization that it focuses in on domestic violence in the life of women?
Okay, well, I am a survivor of domestic violence, and my abuse started at 15, which is why I target our youth. I reach out to our youth quite often. I'm always speaking to groups of teens, promoting healthy relationships and talking about unhealthy relationships and red flags. But Pain to Purpose started because I wanted to help victims of domestic violence. I'm wondering, how could I help? How could I be some type of support? I mean, I don't have a safe space. I don't have, you know, money to give them, but I do want to let them know they're not alone and that they can recover from this. A lot of times when women are abused, or victims are abused, because men are victims as well.
Okay.
When victims are abused, they have to relocate and they have to change their lives and they have to change everything about themselves in order to start over, while the abuser lives free and able to do whatever. Mm-hmm. So it can become frustrating, and it can become, you know, depressing. So I just wanted to let them know that there's life after abuse. So what we started to do was collect purses, and we stuff them with hygiene products.
Okay.
And we take them to various shelters, from Homestead all the way to Broward. And we visit maybe like 6 or 7 shelters throughout the year. Some of them we would go to more than once throughout the year. And so far since 2015, I don't have a complete count, but we've given away over 300 purses
To
the shelters from Homestead to Broward County.
So, Shonda, let's reset a little bit with that. I mean, that's an amazing organization that you described, their pain to purpose. And you help women overcome and deal with the fallout and the blowback that comes from domestic violence. And you said that you have an interest in this because of your past experience with domestic violence starting at age 15. So let me ask you a few questions about you then to help my audience get a sense for your passion and where it comes from. Take me back to that time in your life when you were 15 and you first started to experience domestic violence. Was there something about that situation that made you susceptible to domestic violence? Or was it something that was completely foreign to you and you just woke up one day and found yourself in an abusive relationship?
I'm sure there were plenty of factors. I mean, I didn't have a father in my life.
Okay.
I can't say if that would have made a difference, but I did not have one. My father, I knew who my father was. I know who my father is. I mean, but he just wasn't there. I was born in Freeport, Bahamas, so my dad lives in Bahamas.
Okay.
So when he would come to the States to see us, it was very random. I think I can remember maybe two times I saw my dad.
Mm.
So, and I was raised in a house with nothing but boys. I'm the only girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and my mom worked crazy hours. She worked nights and she slept days and she worked during the day as well. She worked 2, 3, 4 jobs to take care of her 4, 5 kids. So, you know, I don't blame my mom for not being there as much because she had to provide for her family. So I believe at 15, I was looking for something. I was looking for some attention, some love, someone to care for me because
mm-hmm.
I was kind of just like, you know, I have these brothers that's older than me. I had one, they're all older than me. I have a younger brother, but he came on later on. So, you know, I was kind of like doing my own thing, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And someone caught my attention. And when they caught my attention, I was oblivious to the fact that abuse was about to happen.
Mm.
And I stayed with my abuser 9 years after that.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I ended up marrying him at 19.
Oh, wow.
So we go back to 15. So at 15, I met him. I was, catching the bus with some friends, with a friend of mine. And, you know, he pulled up, started flirting with me or whatever. He was older, of course. And it started from there. He started taking me out, started buying me nice things, you know, tennis shoes and jewelry and everything mm-hmm. that I didn't have. We weren't poor, but, you know, mom, just like I said, she was busy working and a lot of things I just didn't have. So a lot of things that I wanted, he got for me. And he was Prince Charming, you know what I mean? So it wasn't
mm-hmm.
like he came off as this aggressive abuser. He was very charming. He was very nice. He was very loving, very caring. And I got sucked in immediately. Now that I'm teaching unhealthy relationships and red flags, when I think back, there were so many red flags. In front of me, I just didn't know that. We didn't have organizations coming around to talk to us about red flags and what to pay attention to.
Sure.
So I saw red flags and didn't know that they were red flags, like him telling me when to be home or why aren't you home or sitting in front of my house until I get home
mm-hmm.
or calling me to make sure I'm home or why are you wearing this and why are you hanging with her? And, you know what I mean, those type of red flags are controlling and they're obsessive, and I didn't pay attention to that. I thought that was love. Oh, he must love me. He wants to know where I am. He must love me. He's sitting here waiting on me to come home. Those are red flags, and those are signs of signs of an unhealthy relationship. But to me, it looked like he just really loved me. And the first time he hit me, it was sitting in the car with him. I'm sorry, sitting in the car, he got out the car to talk to his friend. And I kind of like said something like, I'm ready to go. You know, something with like an attitude. And that was a sign of disrespect to him. Because number one, he don't want me talking back to him. And number two, he was in front of his friends. So he felt like I embarrassed him. So he got back in the car and he drove down this road, Richmond Heights. Back then there's some bushes, now it's all school. But he drove straight down this road. He got out of the car, pulled me out of the car, and just immediately started hitting on me.
Oh, wow.
And he would hit me in my head, not my face, because he didn't want people to know. he was hitting on me. And he told me I couldn't be around him with my face looking any kind of way,
wow.
quote unquote. So he would literally punch me in my head, and I was so afraid. I thought he was going to kill me because we were in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, Lord, what is going to happen to me? So fear kept me with him.
It wasn't love,
because
it
I didn't
fear.
Know when he was going to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you said fear kept you with him. It wasn't love, it was
fear.
Fear
kept me. It was fear, because I feel he beat the love out of me after a while. Yes, I loved him. I'm not going to say I didn't. I did love him for a long time. But after a while, I was afraid. And by the time I got 18, 19, 20, it became a normal, my new normal.
Okay.
It became, I knew what to do to not make him mad. I knew what to say. I knew what to wear or not to wear. It became my new normal. I normalized the abuse. I rationalized the abuse,
mm-hmm.
what was going on. And I kind of like just shut up when I did not want him to beat on me. And I would do what he wanted me to do. And it, like I said, it wasn't like 24/7, don't do this, don't do that. There were moments of love, and there were moments of what I thought was love, and there were moments of compassion and, you know, catering to me and spoiling me. There were great moments of that, but in between those moments, there were abuse. It was kind of tricky, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know, the moment I'm thinking I'm about to leave him, he takes me on a trip. Or the moment I think I'm going to leave him, he takes me shopping or begs and pleads to God for me not to leave him and starts crying and all those type of things will happen. So every time you think you're going to leave, you know, they make you feel, they do the guilt trip. They make you feel like you can't leave them. If you leave them, they're no good. They won't be no earthly good anymore if you leave them. So that's how I end up staying so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would leave, I would come back. Well, I left plenty of times.
Well, Shonda, what you're describing there, you know, just from me being on the outside looking in, you're describing what I would describe as control and someone who's manipulating you through all of these different leverages that they have in your life, such as, okay, you know, I'll treat you nice and I'll spoil you and I'll be extra sweet to you, but it's all about control. It's not really about love. It's just about having control over you. And then when that doesn't work, then I'm going to beat on you and I'm going to abuse you physically and verbally to force you to do what I want you to do. It's not about love.
Exactly.
It's just about control. So, so you experienced this and you describe yourself as obviously as a survivor. What was it for you that brought that relationship to an end and gave you the final bit of perspective about the situation where you said, I'm not going back to this. I'm going to free myself from this.
There were a series of events. Because when you're in that type of a situation, you can't just pick up your bag and say, I'm leaving.
Okay.
You can't just pick up your bag and say, look, I'm done with you today. I'm gone. It doesn't work that way. Not all the time.
Sure.
75% of victims are murdered leaving their partners. 75%.
Wow.
That's a big percentage. And most of them are already gone, and that they're stopped and they're murdered, or they threaten to leave and then they become murdered. You know what I mean? So I thank God I'm part of that 25% that made it out. But there were a series of events. What started it, what I can remember from back then, there was a time where I left him. He came to my mom's house, told me, come get my stuff. Now, he was too calm for me. I'm like, why is he so calm? Let me go get my stuff. I don't want to argue. I don't want to fight. I thought I was done at that moment. So I went to go get my things from his apartment, and he was just standing there very calm and saying things like, you know, I don't want you no more. You can get your stuff. I don't care if you leave, whatever, whatever. So, okay, I'm not arguing because I don't want to, you know, cause any more problems. I want to just get my stuff and go. But since I know him, I grabbed a kitchen knife, a small kitchen knife, and I put it in my hand where he couldn't see it. And I'm getting ready to leave, and I'm going down the elevator, and I see him go towards the stairs. So I went, as I'm in the elevator, I'm just standing there at the door waiting for it to open. And as the elevator door opened, he comes in. He's at the elevator door, and he charges towards me. I picked up the knife and I stabbed him.
Oh, wow.
And I stabbed him right above his heart.
Oh, wow.
And after I stabbed him, I ran out to his car and I flat all his tires so he couldn't follow me in my car.
Oh, wow.
So by the time I did all of that, the security guard just heard the commotion. And I'm screaming by this time because now he's trying to chase me. So So I'm screaming, and the security guard called the police. And I don't know how police got there so fast, but by the time he ran out to where I was trying to get in my car, police pulled up.
Oh, wow.
So police comes up. I jump out my car, and I'm screaming, help me, help me. We both go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
I go to jail because I have a weapon, and he goes to jail because he hadn't hit me at that moment, but he was trying to.
Mm-hmm.
So police took both of us to jail. That was the most humiliating time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt because I was offending myself, I should not have been in jail. Because I'm running to the police. Help me, help me.
Sure.
And they took me to jail. We're sitting across the fingerprint table from each other. And before they took him up to Ward B, for people who are injured, they took him up there because they said, and the question officer came down, she said, you're lucky because had that knife went in 4 more inches, you would have stabbed his heart.
Oh, wow.
You were just that close. She said, but you need to, I know she talked to you, you need to get out of that relationship. And I was like, I know, I need to, because I called, you know, I was just so distraught that I was in jail, this nasty, filthy jail cell, because somebody was trying to hurt me and I was defending myself.
Yeah.
But long story short, we go to court the next morning. They let him out on pretrial. The pretrial would not take me out because of the weapon. Pretrial is something like on your own recognizance.
Okay.
Like you say, I'm going to come back to court at a certain time. We're going to let you out. You don't pay any bond. You just get out. He got out that way. I did not get out. He had to go home and bond me out. Go home and get his money and come bond me out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
So when he bonded me out of jail, I went around, got my stuff out of property. I got in the car with him. And the first thing he said to me was, hey, you want something to eat? Back of a casual day.
Oh, wow.
I stayed in jail an extra night, and I'm crying, and I'm worried. At the time I had my son, it was just like, okay, what do I do? And the first, when I get in the car with him, he's like, do you want something to eat? And that was humiliating to me. I don't know what it was that triggered it, but that was my turning point. At that moment, I said, okay, I need to figure out how I'm going to leave him. And that day, that moment, the next morning, when I would leave for work or I would leave, every time I left the house, I would grab clothes. I would grab little pieces of clothing. I would grab little shoes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I started taking it to a friend of mine's house. She had just moved, so no one knew where she lived. I started taking it to her house until I felt I had enough or I felt it was safe enough to leave him. So one day he went to work. I was laying in the bed like I was sleeping. When he left, I got up, got my car, I left, and I never looked back.
Wow.
Now, it wasn't that easy. He looked for me. He looked for me. He stalked me. I changed jobs. I got another car. I put tents on my car, like limo tents on my car, so he couldn't find me. I literally drove to the parking lot, got on the bus, got back in my car, drove back home. I wouldn't get gas. I wouldn't do anything because I didn't want him to find me. I had pay people to get gas for me because I didn't want him to find me anyway. And this lasted for maybe like a good month or two. And then he didn't find out where I lived, but I ended up, you know, getting ready to get my own apartment. And this may be like maybe the third month. And I started dating. Well, I had met my husband, who I'm married to now. I had met him during that transition. And I got my own apartment. And I started, you know, getting my own stuff. And my husband, I'm calling George. George is my husband's name now, so won't get confused. George was helping me move into my apartment.
Okay.
Somehow, my ex-husband found me that way. I don't know if he followed me one day or found out what car I had. Somehow he found me, and he got my number. He was calling me. I'm like, who is this? And he started begging, like, why don't you take me back? You know, I miss you. How could you leave me? Because this has been like 4 months by now. You know, every day is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wondering why I haven't taken him back. Because as I said before, I've always taken him back. And this is the one time he could not understand why I wasn't taking him back.
Okay.
So long story short, I'm sitting on my bed. I'm talking. I'm telling him, you know, even in that moment, I'm still trying to protect his feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling him, stop calling me. It's over. I'm calm with him, you know. I'm like, I don't want to hurt your feelings. I don't want to be with you anymore. You have to stop calling me. You have to stop bothering me. And the whole time, I hear movement.
Okay.
You know, I hear like him walking in wet grass. And George had went outside to go talk to our neighbor, which was, if you go outside my door, there's a canal to the right. If you go to the left, there's a parking lot. So George went out my door, but I heard my door open. And when I looked down the hallway, it was my ex-husband walking in my apartment.
Oh, wow.
And I thank God George was there, because There's no telling what he would have done, because he shot at me before. He's tried to tie a brick to my ankle before and threatened to throw me in the canal.
Wow.
So I just immediately started screaming. George heard me screaming. He came back in, and he kind of, like, scared him off. You know, he told me he had to get out. He left. And I promise you, that was the last time that man said anything to me.
Wow.
He has not said or uttered a word to me since then. That was, I've been married now 16 years. So it's been 17 years since, or 18 years since I've seen him. He has not, well, I've seen him, but in passing, but he has not said a word to me since my husband told him to get out the house,
wow.
Get out my apartment.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, thank God that wasn't my story that ended in death, but a lot of women did not, you know, don't have that story, and they end up dying. And I don't know if he had a gun on him or not, but I know he carried guns.
Mm-hmm.
And he would try to come and protect himself if he knew someone was at my house or whatever the case may be. I don't know what his plan was, but I just thank God that someone was there with me to help me that night. But that, like I said, that's not everyone's story. But that was how I finally was able to leave him.
Wow. The way that your story with him ends sounds just like the docudrama, what Love's Got to Do with It? What's Love Got to Do with It? How it ended, mm-hmm. where the last time Tina saw Ike in the parking lot after she did a show, and that was the last time they kind of crossed paths, and, you know, at least according to the movie. And, you know,
right.
It's just amazing how it devolved into that, you know, for him. You know, one of the things, Shonda, that it sounds like you're describing, obviously, is you described his personality and how the things he did that were, you know, causing you to feel obviously trapped in that relationship, feeling abused in that relationship, the physical abuse, the encounters that you had with him, the violence. You know, take me into your mindset. You know, I know that you eventually left him and you moved out, and you told me this, what caused you to do it, but one of the questions that always comes up when you talk about any type of domestic violence is people oftentimes question the victim. They say, hey, you know, well, she's putting up with it. You know, she's tolerating that. Help me and my audience understand the mindset of a woman who's suffering through this and why it's not just that simple as, hey, just get your stuff and leave.
Right. And, you know, that is the biggest misconception. Mm-hmm. And it hurts me to my heart, because sometimes it's, people just don't understand.
Sure.
Even if I'm telling them my story and I'm explaining to them why I was so afraid, you could just got up and left. No, because my mind was not going to leave.
Mm.
My body probably would have left. My mind, that's why I kept going back, because my mind was still with him.
Mm-hmm.
They make you feel guilty. They're very manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of times the abuser is their financial provider, and mine was. So I had to worry about, I have to start working now. I mean, I have to keep a job and I have to pay bills now. I never had to do that before.
Mm-hmm.
I never had to worry about paying a light bill, the water bill, the phone bill. Now I have to become independent. I don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He's always taking care of me. I was with him at 15. A 15-year-old to 22-year-old, I didn't know anything about that, because he always took care of me.
Yeah.
So those fears started kicking in. He would use it. I take care of you. What you going to do if you leave me?
Mm.
What you going to do if you need something? I do this for you. I do that for you. I bought you this. You know what I mean? And then you start thinking, well, what am I going to do? Maybe the abuse isn't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's good today. You know, maybe if I stop doing this, he'll stop hitting me. Maybe I stop getting slick out the mouth, he'll stop hitting me. Maybe I stop, you know what I mean? You start rationalizing, mm-hmm. what's going on. So a lot of people think that, or feel that it's just that easy to get up and go. Remind me, I'm going to keep saying this. 75% of women are murdered
leaving an
abusive relationship.
Wow.
75%. That's a huge percentage.
Wow.
If you have a room of 100 people, 75% of them get murdered.
Wow.
So 25 left. That's a huge statistic.
Yeah.
And that's the fear women have, whether they know the statistic or not. They're afraid. He would stalk me.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there are times I could have got up, went to work, and not went home, but he would find me.
Mm-hmm.
I had walked inside clubs, and he's standing at the door of the club. He picked me up and took me back to his car. And no one who saw that said a word.
Mm-hmm.
No one who saw that called the police. Nobody said, ma'am, are you okay? Ma'am, can I help you? I'm kicking and screaming over his shoulder, because he has me over his shoulder. Nobody said a thing. So a lot of times the victim feels helpless.
Mm-hmm.
They have family who probably wants them to leave, and because they didn't leave when the family wanted them to, the family has backed away because they feel they can get up and go. A lot of times the victim feels trapped.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like, well, if I go home with my mama or go home to family, they're not going to help me like he helped me.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to take care of me, or they're going to judge me. They're going to tell me I'm stupid. They're going to tell me I should have left a long time ago. You start thinking about all these different things, and you start going back, well, maybe it's not so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Today was a good day. He didn't hit me today. This week was a good week, or this month was good. We've been having a good time this month. It doesn't happen every day like that. They don't just beat you and drag you every day.
Sure.
It's just something. It happens, and you start thinking that if you, whatever you're doing today that caused them not to abuse you, you can keep doing that to not get abused.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you start making yourself the person that's causing the problem. You start blaming yourself for it. So when people think about or say women can leave, her mentality is not thinking, I can get up and go. I can leave him today and he won't bother me. No, because a lot of times they're holding something against you and making you feel that way. I had a victim that she was not physically abused. He was very verbally abusive and very controlling.
Mm-hmm.
And she was an immigrant from Haiti, and she didn't have all of her paperwork at the time. I believe so. And he would always use that against her, that he would have her deported or he would do something. I think she had a temporary visa or something like that. And he would always tell her he's going to take the kids and go back to Haiti or do something to cause her to stay with him. And he had it so bad that his mom and his sister lived in the house as well. So he would take trips to Haiti for 3 months at a time because he had a company, and his company was based out of Haiti
mm-hmm.
and here. So he was the breadwinner of the relationship, the marriage. So he would go for 3 months at a time, but at those 3 months, his mom and his sister watched her.
Wow.
Watched her and the kids and made sure she didn't go anywhere. So he had control over her when he was in the country.
Oh, wow.
And people are wondering why, how could someone not leave and the person's right next to them? He wasn't even in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And he had that much control over her. That's how much they have control over your mind and have you afraid. He's using her kids against her, telling her he'll take the kids if she leaves. She didn't drive. She didn't have a job. She didn't work. So she didn't work and she didn't go to school or anything. So her whole livelihood was based on him giving her money. So when she reached out to me and asked me, what did she do? She said, I've never worked here. I don't have a car. If I leave him, what's my option? I said, you have to go to a shelter if you don't have anyone to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Me telling someone to come out of their comfort zone.
To go into
a
shelter.
Out of their home, out of their bed. Right, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To go to a shelter where they're strangers. Their option is, okay, maybe I should stay. It's not that bad. I don't want to put my kids in a shelter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want my kids to go live in the shelter. You know what I mean? But then I have to tell them, you don't want your children to see you being treated this way either.
Mm-hmm.
Because every action that we take, every move that we make, it affects our children. So I often tell them, you think about your kids in the long run. Because they see them, you see their father treating you this way, they're either going to become him or they're going to accept people like him.
Wow.
To treat them that way. So, and I talked to her for months before she made a move. We talked almost 2-3 days a week. And every time, you ready? What do you want to do? She goes, no, let me think about it. I'm not sure. What about my kids? And he was not physically abusive.
Mm-hmm.
What about my kids? What about this? How am I going to work? What am I going to drive? So we started making a plan, which we have a seminar called hashtag exit plan. And it just talks about different ways you can leave the relationship and what should you take with you? What should you do? So I started talking to her and I told her, well, first, you need to find somewhere to go. So let's call these different shelters. So we would call them periodically and see who had space or see what she needed to come and what would she, you know, have access to while she's there.
Okay.
And she discovered she needs a car. So she saved up $500 and she bought a car for $500. She parked it at a friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
Then she started taking clothes out the house like I told her I did. So she started taking her and her kids' clothes out the house. And the minute he went back to Haiti, she called another shelter, and they told her that night they had a bed in a room prepared for her and her kids. She left him, and
wow.
She hasn't been back since.
Wow.
And that's been over a year now, and I still talk to her. I still check on her. She finally left him, but it wasn't easy
mm-hmm.
because the car she bought was, the AC didn't work, the windows didn't go down, So she was driving around her kids in a hot car, which made it even more miserable. And the shelter she lived in, people were stealing from her, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was like, she said, I'm going to go back. And I had to really encourage her, don't go back. I know it's hard right now, but it's going to get better. Trouble don't last always.
Yep.
You have to fight through this so you can make a life for you and your children. So she ended up working two jobs. She really, really is working two jobs. And then she finally saved up enough money to buy her a better car.
Mm-hmm.
And then she ended up working one job that paid more. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Now she's living in a transition home where you can stay there for like 2 years and you have to save up money and they help you, you know, get back on your feet. So now she's in a transition home and she's doing great. And, you know, and I use her story a lot because even though it was so hard for her to leave and she doubted it, she didn't think she could do it. And look what she's doing. And she's not even from here.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt it was going to be hard for her because of her immigration status. And they also, and some agencies also are able to help you, get, you know, with your immigration status. Well, at the time, I don't know what's going on now. But
Whole other story.
Right. So, you know, and it's hard. I kind of got off topic. I'm sorry. I know you asked me what they say about women who stay. It's not that easy to leave. It's not that easy to get up and go. You just don't leave the relationship because you're tired today
mm-hmm.
without endangering yourself. You have to be careful when you leave.
Yeah. No, you brought, I mean, that brings us into that world. And you touched on all those different practical challenges that often are in place. Because to your point, if a person has control over you in whatever way, whether it's financial, whether it's emotional, in that case that you just described, whether it's the immigration status, you can't just mm-hmm. simply leave without having a plan for transitioning out of that toxic situation.
Right.
You know, now I'm going to ask you this question, just as somebody who's trying to learn, you know, about the work you do and also kind of have trying to put the things in perspective that you're saying and teaching. How do you know as a married couple, or even I'm not going to say necessarily a married couple, but just a couple, right? How would you know when your relationship has gone from difficulties that are normal, and I say that depending on what your definition of normal is, into mm-hmm. abuse? And because I think that's one of the things that, you know, full disclosure, I was married. I'm a divorcee. I've been through divorce. And that was one of the problems that obviously came up in our relationship was that, you know, there were times in a relationship where, you know, we would have verbal, you know, disagreements, but then it got to the point where it turned into like just what I would consider verbal abuse. And then it went from verbal abuse to, some physical altercations, right? Where, you know, one person, and I'm saying this trying to protect my, trying to be, you know, generous to my ex, but one person decided that they were going to approach one person like they were a man. That's the best way I can describe
mm-hmm.
it. And, you know, and obviously those situations don't end well for anybody. And in that situation, right, here I am trying to avoid being an abuser and being overly aggressive and being in this toxic situation. Because, like you said, it's embarrassing, right? You don't want to have the police called on you. You don't want, you know, the police showing up to your house and people looking, your neighbors looking, and you going to jail because of a situation where one person decided to lose their cool. So, you know, for me, that was some of the red flags for me, or the writing on the wall, that the relationship was coming to an end, the marriage was coming to an end, because it had gotten to the point where now it had turned physical, and here I am not initiating, you know, the physical stuff, but I'm finding myself in this situation where I'm exposing myself to the risk of being in a relationship with somebody who thinks that being physical is the way to solve these problems. So with all of that said, and all that background given, you know, how does someone know that their relationship has gone from being just a difficult time that normal people in normal relationships have, and now this crossed over into this realm of abuse where either they need to leave, or they could, like you said, they could very well leave the relationship dead because of the gross statistics that you describe in terms of how women are often killed in domestic violence situations?
Well, it's hard to kind of pinpoint or kind of generalize the relationship, because everyone goes through different things and they handle it differently. But when you're in a marriage or a relationship that was going good and all of a sudden something happens,
mm-hmm.
Or something switches, it could be from maybe financial strain has caused a problem, or
okay.
Maybe someone has a mental breakdown, and that's how they react to it.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Something just triggers different things. That when you start seeing jealousy, when you start seeing controlling, when you start seeing isolation, if they want to isolate you from your family or from your friends, they only want to be around you and you only want you around them. Those are type of signs that, okay, something's going on. That if they've never shown it before. Something's going on. What's going on? You either call it to the table and figure out what's going on, or you sit and you wait and watch it progress. Because if you don't handle it, deal with it, or leave the situation, it's going to progress. A lot of times they blame you. You know, your significant other will blame you for mistakes that you make, or they make you feel like everything is your fault. Everything is going on with you. They're hypersensitive. You know, there's different things that could trigger or show you that your relationship is going for the long term. And it's hard to say or hard for people to do, just get up and go. When you've been in a relationship, let's say 5 years, 3 years, 2 years, all of a sudden they become abusive. Mm-hmm. But that's what you need to do. To protect yourself, you need to get out. Assess what's going on. If it's something that you feel is going to become aggressive, you have to get out. Figure out how you're going to leave. Because you don't want to find yourself a year later, 2 years later, sucked in. And when you get sucked in, it's even harder to get out. So, you know, I set out that to say it's, you know, depending on the relationship and your state of where you are in your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And if those behaviors start all of a sudden when you're already 2 months in, a year in, and you know or you feel they're going to get more aggressive, then you need to get out of the relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't tell anyone, or I don't think anyone should stay and work it out, because I don't know what work it out means. I want to be like, well, you told them to stay, I'm telling you to get out.
Okay.
Now, if you choose to stay, that's on you, because I can't tell you what he or she will or will not do.
Sure.
There are women who have killed their boyfriends and women who have killed their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
If she's breaking your windows and scratching your car and taking your phone and trashing your phone, she was an abusive woman. You need to get out of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And she's badgering you or talking to you in any kind of way. I don't want my son to do with any woman who disrespects him.
Yes.
That's verbally abusive.
Yep.
And as a man, a lot of men don't know how to control or can't control or can't deal with a woman talking to them that way.
Mm-hmm.
So now when he hits her, not that he should, but if he hits her, now he becomes an abuser.
Exactly.
And he has two aggressive people in their relationship, and it's not going anywhere. People stay in toxic relationships when they should get the heck out.
Yeah.
Out quickly.
No, I'm, you know, this is my podcast, so I can say it the way you really need to say it. They need to get the hell out.
So,
they need to get the hell out. No, you bring up a great point, because that's what you find yourself dealing with. And as somebody who's been in an abusive relationship, you know, and I'm not saying it as if I've never done some abusing in my relationships, right? Like, I'm not saying that in terms of being verbally abusive. I've never been physically abusive to anybody, but, you know, I have been verbally abusive, and I'm not going to, you know, point fingers about that. I own that. That's part of me growing up as a man. I had to own that and look at myself and admit that. The end of the day, you don't want to be in a situation where you can't be rational and reasonable and patient and kind to each other to work things out. If you find yourself, to your point, in a relationship where you've got to be aggressive and angry and hostile and toxic towards one another in order to bring about a resolution to a problem, then you're probably in a dysfunctional relationship. So, you know, as Shauna, as we kind of wrap up and transition, you know, back into your organization that you're talking about here, Pain to Purpose, you know, you talked about recognizing red flags, and you gave an example of a red flag about the controlling aspect, but what are some other red flags that people need to pay attention to as they form relationships? Because this is good. The reason I'm sucked into this now is because I'm dating. So I need to know as many red flags as I can to avoid getting into a situation where, you know, it's not healthy. So help me out and help my audience out. What are some other red flags other than controlling personality that might be a sign that this person may be an abuser?
Okay. Well, let me just respond to what you just said. I want men to understand that they can become victims as well. I talk to teenagers all the time, and these boys really don't think
that they can become victims. They feel like overpower her. She can't, no, because now you're an abuser. You can't hit her.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
men have also become victims. And now with all of these, I don't want to say it wrong, LGBT, I don't know the acronym, but with the different relationships that's going on now,
sure.
and it happens in that community as well.
Okay.
So no one is exempt from abuse. No one. And we can come back and talk about that another day, but no one is exempt from abuse. But definitely red flag, we said controlling,
mm-hmm.
Insecure. Insecure is a big red flag.
Okay.
When you're insecure about anybody and everyone that's around you or anything that you've done, if you're on your phone, who's that? Who's calling you? Or who's on your Facebook page?
Mm-hmm.
Why does she like your post? Why did he like your post? Why you put a heart on, you know what I mean? Those
mm-hmm.
are very insecure red flags. Lack of trust, lack of communication, certain things like that, if they don't want to talk about it, they hold it in. Those are red flags. Not saying you need to get believed right then,
mm-hmm.
but that's definitely something you need to pay attention to.
Okay.
You need to pay attention to if they're very secretive. I know my cousin was very secretive about things that he wanted me to know.
Sure.
Had I looked him up, what I do now, well, I don't date anymore, but I tell women now to do background checks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of that stuff is public information on the court system.
Sure.
Any city and state that you're in, look up the county and put in clerk of court. So if you're in Miami-Dade County, type Miami-Dade County clerk of court.
Okay.
And look up on the criminal.
Yep.
Look up on the criminal, type in their name, their birth, or whatever you have, which you should have by that time, and you look up. If they have a past of battering women, get the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
If they have a past of battering men, get the hell out. If
she's
mm-hmm. cut her boyfriend before, if she's flat his tires before, get the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
You need to leave because that means they're aggressive in some kind of way. Now, I'm not saying people can't change, but let them change somewhere else, not with you. Move on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like you ask about their past relationship, you know, find out what happened. Even if they tell the truth or not, you know, still try to find out what happened in the past relationship. Why did it end? Why was it over? You know what I mean? You need to find out what's going on and listen to what they say. A lot of people will show you who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're verbally abusive. They change their mood quickly. If something happens and y'all smile at women the next minute, they cussing and screaming at somebody, pay attention to those red flags and mood swings. Definitely they threaten you. They threaten violence. That's a huge red. That is the red flag.
Mm-hmm.
If they tell me, you know, if you leave me, I'm going to kill me and you, and they laugh about it,
mm-hmm.
they're not joking.
Wow.
They probably are serious, and you don't want to risk your life trying to determine if they were really joking or not.
Sure.
So, you know, things like that you need to pay attention to.
Wow. Wow, those are great. I mean, those are great. I mean, and those make sense. They all make sense. And, you know, I know that from some of the past relationships I've been in, some of the past dating situations I've been in, that I've experienced some of those things from people. And you're right. Those are usually red flags that at the minimum, the relationship's not going to work. At the worst,
right.
to what you're describing, could be something where it turns into a violent situation. You know, Shonda, while you did mention that, and if you have time, we'll go into this briefly, but one of the things that I've been somewhat helping to champion in my little space I have on the internet, on my social media, is that one of the things that we need to be honest about is, and you've been very candid about it, and I was really surprised at how honest you've been about this, but that both men and women can be victims. And I think oftentimes we've heard in our culture that men should never hit women, and I completely agree with that because of the situations, in differences in strength and physicality between men and women. But also, we never hear the other side that women should never hit men. And you expressed
right.
that, you know, you've been expressing that. So, you know, how can we get our young children, both men and women, or boys and girls, to understand that they shouldn't, as my grandma would say, they shouldn't be passing licks between each other. So,
right.
You know, yeah.
Right.
You know, how do we educate them that, you know, this is bad for both, that just because you're a girl and I have a little goddaughter that I love to death, but I need to let her know, you know, with her parents too, obviously, that, hey, you know, don't go around hitting little boys because one day they're going to be big enough where they can hit you back and it's going to hurt a lot more than when you hit them, you know.
Right.
So how do we educate them on that?
I have two boys. 16 and 20, and I have my daughter, she's 14.
Mm-hmm.
But all growing up, and I've raised five kids. The other two have moved on.
Mm-hmm.
But I raised five kids. It was two girls and three boys. And I wouldn't even let them play fight. I wouldn't let them wrestle
mm-hmm.
because somebody gonna get in their feelings.
Yep.
And my boys didn't care if that's a little girl. They, you know, they be like, "You hit me, no." So I always tell my boys and tell my girls, "Keep your hands to yourself. Don't worry about anybody hitting anybody."
Mm-hmm.
So I would tell my girls, just because you're a girl, don't mean you can go up and hit your brother. Don't do it. Don't come telling me that he hit you when you hit him first. Don't do it. And I tell my boys know. Of course, now, they do not put their hands on a girl, no matter what. Now, I don't care what I tell them, what they're going to do in the situation, I don't know, but I've taught them that. So I said it to say, it starts at home. We have to teach our children not to hit each other.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of parents think it's just playing. No, because some kids take that seriously, and they take it outside the home. I have a little godson that my oldest son wrestles with. So what did he do when he go to school? Wrestles with his schoolmate.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, he gets in trouble for it. So I tell my son, don't wrestle with him because he's going to think it's okay to do it when he goes to school. We have to teach them at home. Don't do it. When I talk to the kids, you know, and I get down to earth with them, I tell them, girls, you can't be walking up to no boy slapping the side of his head
mm-hmm.
and expect him just to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he should hit you. But how you know he's not going to knock the hell out of you?
Yeah.
You can't do that.
That's
and
true.
If you're going to jump up, run to your teacher and say, "Miss, he hit me." But you're not going to say that you hit him first.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. You cannot tell someone how to react by what you do to them.
Mm-hmm.
If I run up to you and I punch you in your face and say, "You better not hit me back," I can't tell you how to react to that.
That's true.
And I also tell my boys and my daughter, you teach people how to treat you. What you tolerate is what you will allow.
Mm-hmm.
So don't allow anyone to mistreat you. And I'm talking about friendships as well. If you're in a friendship that's not healthy, get out the friendship. Because you don't want to be that friend that's looking sick and sad later on in life because you have a friend that's been mistreating you.
Oh, wow.
I teach kids all the time, keep your hands to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even play fight because it's not cute. I hate to see kids play fight and they got each other in the headlock because somebody's going to get mad, going to turn into a fight, it's going to be worse.
That's it.
Don't do it. So when I talk to you, that's what I tell them. I just don't play fight. Don't even act like, especially when you're a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship,
mm-hmm.
don't walk up to them and slap them in the face like you play fighting and then they slap you back and now you're mad. You can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
also, you're also to treat each other with love and respect, supposed to encourage and nurture each other, and make you're supposed to feel good in your relationship. It's not going to be peaches and cream, you know, all the time. But if you're going to argue, you respectfully argue. Don't
yeah.
disrespect each other in the argument. Don't cuss each other out, call to the names in the argument.
Mm-hmm.
Argue about the situation and move on. If you can't argue about it, respectfully table it and come back to it later. My husband and I do that now after 17 years of being together.
Mm-hmm.
If we cannot argue, and I think my kids have probably heard us argue maybe three times in our 17 years
mm-hmm.
because we just don't do it in front of them. You know, our kids learn how to be in relationship and how to have relationship by watching our relationship. And you have to be careful what you show in front of your children. So it starts at home. We have to teach our kids and whoever we put them in front of, you know, like a speaker like myself, I talk to them about that.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't get it at home, I talk to them about, you know, keeping their hands on their stuff, respecting each other, respect that person you're with. You can't disrespect people and expect them to not treat you the same way. You can't do that.
Wow. Wow. I think, Shonda, that's a great place to wrap up our conversation, and that's great advice to end on. How can people find out more information about your organization, Pain to Purpose? Especially you sound like you're from what we discussed this during this conversation that you're down in the Miami area, but
if people
want to support and find out more about what you do, and you said that you would speak. So, you know, maybe if people want to have you come and do a seminar or discussion about domestic violence, where can people find out more information about Pain to Purpose?
Our website is pain76.org.
Okay.
And we are on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Same thing, Pain, the number 2, Purpose, and 76.
Okay.
Our phone number is 305-791-3417. And we do have a booking section on our website if you want to book me to come speak or someone in our team to come speak to either youth or to the women. I've spoken on panels at women's conferences. and so on and so forth. So we don't charge a fee, but we do have an option to donate on our website, on our Twitter, on our Facebook. We're always taking donations because we're always going to the shelter, and we love to bless the women with beautiful purses and the items that go inside their purses. So whenever we can accept donations, we do accept donations all the time.
Awesome. Awesome. Shonda, thank you so much for being a part of the conversation, and thank you for your work that you're doing to help women escape these violent situations, and also just bringing awareness to domestic violence and bringing your experience and your perspective to that space so that people understand what it is that they're actually dealing with and how dangerous it is to be in a violent situation like that. Thank you so much for what you're doing.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Shonda Roberts of Pain to Purpose. If you guys want to get in touch with Shonda, please be sure to check out her website, pain2purpose76.org, and see what she has going on helping women to overcome domestic violence. If nothing else, you'll get a chance to learn some things about domestic violence and be able to spread that information in your communities so that you can help people be better in their relationships and also survive toxic relationships that produce domestic violence. Well, with that said, please be sure to check out Culture and Conversations on Facebook, Culture and Conversations on Instagram, and if you want to send me an email to the show, cultureandconversations@gmail.com. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for rocking with us. Thank you guys for checking out the podcast and sharing it. Once again, thank you guys for being part of the conversation. And just for the record, I got this recording in one take. Peace.